This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. District Court Judge Deborah Knott has solved murders and helped guide the hand of justice all over North Carolina. The heroine of Margaret Maron's murder mystery series lives in a world familiar to anyone who's ever gotten sand in their shoes at Harker's Island or climbed the hills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. But it took Maron 17 books to take Deborah Knott to the Big Apple, where she sleuths it up with another of the author's fictional creations, Lieutenant Sigrid Harold. Margaret Maron's latest murder mystery is called Three-Day Town. It comes out next week. Margaret Maron came out today to talk with us. Good to see you again.
Oh, thank you, Frank, for having me.
So tell us about this. It took 17 episodes to finally get these two characters together.
Yeah, well, readers have been asking for it, been asking for the last few years what's been happening with Sigrid, and was I totally finished with her? And I had done a couple of short stories, but this was an opportunity to see her in action in her own city. And it gave me a chance to let them have a honeymoon. Deborah and Dwight got married in what in their universe was last year, and now they're finally having a honeymoon. And, of course, what is more romantic than New York City in January in the middle of a snowstorm?
Sometimes you got to do it. What you got to do as an author. We're going to get them together. And you should reacquaint us, if you will, with Deborah Knott, Sigrid, and Dwight.
Okay. Deborah Knott is a late 30s, going almost 40, your district court judge. She has 11 older brothers. She grew up on a tobacco farm. Her father was a bootlegger. He's supposedly retired now from doing that. Dwight was like another brother to her. He was another one of the kids that used to come out to the farm and shoot whatever ball was in season. And she just thought of him as somebody to hang out with when she wasn't involved with someone else. And eventually he proposed to her saying, "You know, you're not interested in anybody. I'm not interested in anybody. Let's get married."
How romantic.
Yeah, isn't that romantic?
But and we should say Deborah, of course, became a judge and he became a deputy sheriff's deputy.
Yeah, has been all along. And Sigrid Harold, though, that character was actually, Sigrid is the antithesis of Deborah. When I came to write a North Carolina series, I deliberately made Deborah the complete opposite of Sigrid. So whereas Deborah is comfortable in her clothes, Lieutenant Sigrid Harold of the New York Police Homicide Department is not. She doesn't have many friends. She doesn't have many relatives, although she does have a Colleton County background because her grandmother lives in Colleton County and has always lived there. The Lattimores have always lived there. And Mrs. Lattimore is actually a very, very distant relative of Deborah's. So when Mrs. Lattimore asks Deborah to take a package that's well-wrapped, and Deborah has no idea what's in it, take this package with her to New York, Deborah doesn't really have a choice. This old lady's asked her to do it. This old lady's rich and powerful. This old lady gets what she wants.
She wants, and she is a feisty old lady
with
opinions that she doesn't hold back.
Right.
A wonderful character in the book. So there they are on their honeymoon, going to New York. Deborah and Dwight are finally married. And your readers have been waiting for this for quite some time.
Oh, yes.
Because we've all seen that coming.
It
took a while, but they finally figured it out. Now they're in New York, and they've got this statue, this bronze that they're going to deliver.
Yeah, it's roughly the shape of a beer can, a tall beer can. And it's cylindrical. It's very heavy. And it is a little strange. And one of the reasons that I let them go to New York on the train was so that this package did not have to go through X-ray. So would you like to hear what's in the package?
I would be yes. Although it is an objet d'art.
Yes, it
so,
is.
So and so we understand that art is art.
Art is art, except that this particular piece of art was created to be offensive. It was meant to be anti-Semitic. It was meant to be anti-Negro, black, because it was created before the Second World War.
Yeah.
Okay? And in this particular scene, Deborah's been trying to deliver this package, and the Mrs. Lattimore's daughter is out of the country, and so she winds up talking to the granddaughter, which is Sigrid, who says, "Look, this is in the telephone conversation. My mother's in New Zealand. I have an appointment in half an hour. Would you mind opening the package and telling me what it is?" "No problem," I assured her, happy to have permission to satisfy my own curiosity. "Hang on a minute." There were scissors and a pencil jar on the kitchen counter, and a few snips revealed a sturdy cardboard box. Inside was something swaddled in newsprint and bubble wrap, and inside that, dear Lord, in the morning, I said before I could stop myself, I'm not a prude. I've leafed through the Kama Sutra, and I've seen my share of naked men, but this was not something I would ever have expected from someone as proper as Mrs. Lattimore. It was a bronze statuette, about 6 or 7 inches tall, roughly cylindrical, and so intricately modeled that it took me a minute to sort out the intertwined arms and legs and other bodily appendages and to decide exactly where those appendages were and what they were doing. Dwight glanced up from my digital camera where he was reviewing pictures we'd taken earlier, did a double take, then grinned broadly as he snapped several shots of me turning the thing in my hand. "What is it?" I heard Miss Harrell say. I examined it up and down and sideways, and each view was more lascivious than the last. Dwight took it from my hand and pointed out a particularly inventive position. "We should try that one," he murmured with an exaggerated leer. I put my hand over the mouthpiece to hide my laughter. "In your dreams." "Mrs. Bryant," the woman's voice was becoming impatient. "It's a little statuette," I said. "Looks like bronze." "A statuette? Of what?" "Well, I think it's three men." Even as I spoke, I discovered at least two more faces and another penis amid the tangle of arms and legs. "You think? Is it abstract?" "Oh, no," I assured her. "It's realistic, very realistic. It appears to be several naked men who are, I searched for an appropriate word, who are pleasuring each other." There was blank silence from the other end. "Miss Harrell, and my grandmother sent this to my mother? Perhaps I should come up this evening after all. Would 10 or 10:30 be too late?" "Not at all, but someone down the hall has invited us to a party at 9. You might ought to follow the noise and check for us there. I'll be wearing a red sweater." "I'll see you at 10:30, said Miss Harrell.
Margaret Maron reading from her latest mystery, Three Day Town. A fascinating piece of art that you put in there. And I think, you know what it did for me, among other things, it played an important part, of course, in the story. But it does point up the difference between Sigrid and Deborah in the sense, yes, that this is now a real source of tension. This much graphic, it's a real close look, mm-hmm, at something that's graphic and detailed. And I really got to – because you're putting them together in the same place. So it was, yes, important for me to see how different they were.
Yes, yes. And I did lay down the clue in the last book, Christmas Morning. Mrs. Lattimore gives her the package at the end of that book. So it's sort of a cliffhanger. And this – lets the reader know what was in that package that they first heard about a book ago.
Tell us about the title, The Three Day Town.
Three Day Town comes from a quote by James Cameron, who said, "I love short trips to New York. To me, it is the finest three-day town on earth." And I have to agree, although 4 days is pretty good.
Yeah, you could spend even more time. New York is, yeah, is definitely a character in this book. How if it was a person, how would you describe it?
A person who is busy, abstracted, distracted, maybe is a better word, that, you know, is willing to take you in if you have something to offer, but is not necessarily going to reach, mm-hmm, out a hand and draw you in as, say, Colleton County would.
Interesting that you started that Sigrid was your first character. She, mm-hmm, you developed her and her stories before you brought Deborah.
Absolutely.
Or created her in North Carolina. Did you have to do that first? Did you have to write about someplace else before you could come home and write?
Well, I had lived there, and the first book was actually based on some experiences that I had working in the Brooklyn College Art Department up there. And so I felt like I knew it well enough, but then I did want to bring my writing home. And at that point, I figured that I had pretty much finished with Sigrid. I had written 8 books about her. Well, 7. I did write an 8th book after I had started the North Carolina series. But that really was to finish her story, the arc of her story. And I never really expected to write about her again. But as I say, she keeps popping up in my subconscious, and my readers keep asking about her. And so I thought, well, why not?
You have written that the mystery novel is the peg upon which I hang my love and concerns for North Carolina. Yes. How does seeing the world through the New York prism?
Well, this was a little bit different. Yeah. I mean, I was not thinking of that, except that the last time when we were up there last January, when I was researching the book, and I used that scene in this book because it just tickled me so much. There were people standing outside on the sidewalk in this cold January night. They had just met and had just realized that they were all from North Carolina, and that one of them had a cousin who was a sister-in-law of one of the other people. So it's always this idea of Southerners trying to connect and to link up, even in the big city.
And they didn't all start singing James Taylor songs. I hate it when that happens in New York. You know, you begin every chapter with an excerpt from the New New York, which mm-hmm. was published in 1909. What sort of publication was that, and what drew you to it?
It was a book about New York and what was happening there, and it was sort of a boosterism type, Chamber of Commerce type book. And the author just wanted to let everybody know how wonderful New York was and how all this modern stuff was happening. And one of the things that was interesting to me was, and I'll read this really brief quote, from 1860 to 1880, steam and hydraulic elevators were in use, but it was not until about 1888 that electric elevators came into vogue. With the coming of the elevator, the eight-story buildings began to pay better in their top floors than in their middle or lower ones. High livers, so-called, prefer the light and the air up aloft. Everything began to rise with the elevator. And the elevator is almost a metaphor for what's happening in this building. This is a co-op building, apartment building that was built before the war, had been rent controlled, now has been sold to the various tenants. But they still have a 24/7 elevator operator. And I thought it was just interesting that here they are, these elevator operators going up and down, but never in and out like the tenants who live there do. And especially since these are rather affluent tenants. And so here are these young kids who are operating the elevator and acting as porters and janitors. And here are these privileged youths who play tricks with the elevators. But they're going to go out. They're not going to be up and down their whole career lives.
Would you read for us again from Three Day Town?
Sure. this gives more of a feeling of who Sigrid was. And Sigrid has met Deborah for supper. They're going to go out to dinner together. There was a time when Sigrid would not have noticed what another woman was wearing, or else would have been intimidated if the woman was as confidently attractive as this judge appeared to be. Although Grandmother Lattimore seemed to love her as much as her other granddaughters, she had bluntly voiced her doubt that such an ugly duckling could ever evolve into the swan every other Lattimore woman became, as if beauty were a birthright. Even when they were not classically beautiful, they carried themselves as if they were, and a willing world agreed. You're already too tall, and your neck is too long, but you have nice eyes, and they do say you're going to be real intelligent, her grandmother had said with a sigh when Sigrid was 12 or 13, and nothing but skinny arms and legs. It took Oscar Naumann, and that was her lover, a world-famous artist who was killed in one of the earlier books. It took Oscar Naumann to make her apply that intelligence to her looks and to realize that making the most of one's physical assets was not some arcane mathematical problem. For years, she had worn her fine dark hair pulled straight back into a utilitarian bun. Then, on an impulse, she'd gotten it cut short so that it feathered across her forehead and softened her brow. After that, she read a couple of books, looked up some online tutorials, experimented with light makeup that could and would enhance her high cheekbones and wide gray eyes. She learned that lip paint would last all day, and some colors flattered her own pale skin while others would make her look washed out. It was only an exercise in logic after all, she told herself, much like the puzzle rings she collected and put together when working through the intricacies of a homicide case. So she approaches beauty as if it were a mathematical problem.
Yeah, and a problem.
Yes.
The key word there is problem.
Oh, yes, very much a problem.
And she notices these things. Earlier on in the book, she is checking out a room, notices how it is decorated, and notes that it is masculine. Mm-hmm. These are details that matter to her, how people yes. dress, and the fact that she's not like the other in terms of her concern for mm-hmm. these things. Mm-hmm. She realizes that, that makes her a little different. And we're not going to lose her because she comes back, right?
Yes.
You can't get rid of her.
Well, I thought it was only fair. Since I let Deborah go to New York, I thought it was only fair that Sigrid would have to come to Colleton County.
And that's in The Buzzard's Tale, which is yeah. out next year.
Yes, yes. Right? The Buzzard Table.
A Buzzard Table, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. The Buzzard Table mm-hmm. is number 18. It's coming out next year. You and so you're going to bring Sigrid to North Carolina.
Yes, yes, I am.
We look forward
so
to that.
So we're going
to
see what happens when that happens.
Now, what is it like for you? That would be number 18. You're on a contract. You do one a year.
Yes.
Right? We love them all, but how about you? How are you doing, Mark?
Well, I have to say, after 25 books, yeah. I'm starting to wish that I had longer time between books than meeting the deadline. Although I have always worked to a deadline, so I don't know how I would do if I had an open-ended, free-spirited thing that to work with. I have no idea.
Does it get easier or harder with each successive book?
Well, in a way, it's easy because I know these characters so well. But on the other hand, it's harder because you want to keep the characters fresh. And you want it to not recapitulate what you've done before. I mean, it would be too easy just to fall back on the family. I mean, readers love her family, and I do too, for that matter. But still, you can just have too much of that warm fuzzies, and mm-hmm. you need to. So in the next book, I try to step it up a little.
And you've got to keep track of the genealogy and the families and who lived and who died in the last several books.
Yes, yes.
Now, we're lucky to have found you, and you're in town because you're teaching at Duke this week, right?
Yes, I am. I'm the Blackburn visiting writer this year. I think I'm the first mystery writer they've had. They usually go for poets and more literary people, although they have had Orson Scott Card do it. And, of course, he's science fiction and speculative fiction.
Well, you have a kindred spirit in Michael Malone over there
who
will not make the distinction between literary and mystery and, for that matter, soap opera.
Yeah.
And you don't – I mean – is that true? Is that a worthy distinction, do you think? Is it necessary or even a useful distinction?
I don't know. I really don't. The students that I have in this seminar are really hardworking, interested. They don't know that much about the mystery genre, though. But I am trying to get them to write and plot a short mystery, really do a whodunit in 3,000 words.
Is there, when you're talking with them, are you talking about the craft of the mystery or is there something larger about writing?
Well, we talk about the craft of writing.
Yeah.
And what you need to do to pull a person and to pull your reader into the story and keep them there, that you can have wonderful metaphors and similarities that you can talk about, but if those metaphors pull the reader out of the story, you know, that doesn't work.
Kind of breaks
the bubble. So we talk about some of the mechanics of writing per se. I think you can teach plotting and character. You can't necessarily teach somebody to be a writer. I mean, I think that is – I mean, I was talking with someone else about imagination. And you can foster it, but you can't necessarily create it in someone.
Well, we're glad that it has been created in you. And you keep coming up with these wonderful novels, and we're certainly looking forward to your next one, The Buzzard's Table. But the most recent is 3 Day Town. Margaret Maron is my guest. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Margaret Maron's newest murder mystery, 3 Day Town, the 17th installment of the Deborah Knott Mystery Series. She's going to hold a free public reading at 7:30 Thursday night in the East Duke Building Parlors on the East Campus. And she's going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh on Friday night at 7:30. For more details, go to margaretmaron.com. Maron is spelled M-A-R-O-N. Next up, celebrating three faiths through the music of the Abraham Jam. Stay tuned.